The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
It's the big transfer story of the week. Pod moves from Monday to Tuesday morning. Was it worth it? We discuss as we salute the passing of a transfer window whose ticker has now finally given out. There's the big moves, call them Bale Madrid, the Premier League's late Monday flurry from Meza to Marouane. Then it's on to that weekend action Sunday at the Emirates. Vindication for Wenger in the North London derby. At Anfield, short shrift for the visitors in the box, particularly if they're called Roy Hodgson. Elsewhere, Serie A ate my goal. Di Canio tells it like it is. And Derby of the Riviera won by a man named Riviere. All that and more in Football Weekly. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Football Weekly. So many big stories to discuss. Here's one I wasn't expecting. Over to you, Paul McInnes.
Well, the walkie-talkie building melted a car.
Melted a car?
Yeah. It's like the new there's a new building in London that's shaped like a walkie-talkie. It's bigger at the top than it is at the bottom.
Is the curvature of the window, does it cause a prism-like effect on the sun's rays?
Hang on a minute. You're not the architect of this building, are you, James?
Seriously, it melted a car.
It melted a Jag, even better.
Wow, when you say melted, there wasn't like a pool of metal.
It just ran down the drains.
Can I just ask how it melted it?
Well, because the light is refracting off it and intensifying. And I was listening to the radio.
You're familiar with a magnifying glass?
Yeah. So
what happened if you place
How quickly did this happen?
Well, a guy left his car. He claims to have left his car for 2.5 hours and come back to find a woman photographing it. Presumably so she could put it on Twitter and get it out there. And
did you see the picture?
Yeah, because it was in the metro.
Ah, cool. And what did it look like?
It looked like somebody had kind of had a fender bender on the front end.
Wow, so it was all warped and stuff?
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
That's good, isn't it?
Brilliant. Okay.
Could that be applied? Could FIFA put that in instead of goal line technology or something?
Wow. It's like death ray technology, but it's incorporated into the building.
Exactly.
You know, but you just have to get the subject to stand still for 2.5 hours and stuff. But anyway, listen, you probably gathered by now that we have Paul McInnes very much with us. Also, Greg Bukowski.
Hello.
Hi, Greg. And Jacob Steinberg. Hi, Jacob.
Hello.
Your view on the warped window? No. You want to get onto the football, don't you?
Well, I just found out about it.
Yeah, I'm crazy. Stunned.
It's coming to terms.
Yeah. How much news?
I need a moment.
How much news? Who watched Bale's introduction yesterday?
Yes.
Well,
I felt a bit embarrassed for him, how bad he was at doing his keepy uppies. That was my big thing about just thinking about Bale. I was thinking, if I was him now, I'd be really scared about doing my keepy uppies and getting them wrong, and he did. And then I think he was talking about it this morning, saying he was very nervous. And
You would be, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, you would be very nervous, but just keep it simple. Don't try and do all the round the world stuff where
they
you put your foot
that
round
guy
the ball.
From that five-a-side tournament.
He could have done it with his lips.
He started doing, that guy was doing it with his lips. Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah. He did the world record, Guinness Book of World Records, keep you ups with your lips.
How can you do keep you ups with your lips?
Well, this is we wondered as well, and he basically's got very strong lips, and I think he puts balm on them so he doesn't injure his lips in the process of doing this amazing.
There is living after all.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. So he did them, and we all had to stand around and cheer and clap when he got the world record. Yeah, it was quite impressive.
Was it on something like Soccer AM or Sky or Gillette Soccer Saturday?
Perhaps, yeah. Well, maybe we were on there. I just wouldn't have known. Yeah. It was at a five-a-side tournament, big media five-a-side tournament in which we got beat.
In the final.
Yeah. By Men's Health.
Yeah. Wow, that's two huge stories. We haven't even gotten to the transfer window yet. That's amazing. And, let's talk about it. I mean, we'll come on to Bale a little bit later on and his glorious Spanish introduction. Hala Madrid, he said. A terrible accent. Hello, Madrid. Hello. That's how it's pronounced. Premier League clubs spent, it says here, according to Sporting Intelligence, £627 million on players in the summer window, smashing the old record, etc. A big day for the agents, hey.
Big day for everybody. Everybody gets their cut at the end of the day, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, don't we?
Including the reams of ex-professionals who get to turn out on the various broadcasters to punditise for 12 hours straight.
What was your favourite transfer, Jacob?
Mesut Ozil.
Right. Yeah. All right. I've got Owen Gibson here. He says, Ozil is a fantastic signing, but on his own is rather like a fancy painting for the living room when the bathroom still needs fixing. Is that fair?
Yeah, maybe, but when you get offered a chance to sign Mesut Ozil, you don't say no thanks, which is possibly what Manchester United did. And there was a rumour going around that they did actually try to hijack the deal when it was being put through.
Was it them
night.
Or was it imposters?
Well, maybe we'll come on to that in a bit.
But, right.
I think that he's just a brilliant player, Mesut Ozil. a surprise, well, not surprised so much that Madrid are losing him, but because they have so many players in that position, but I think he will be a big loss for them. And even if Arsenal do have players like that, I think sometimes last season Cazorla got a little bit tired, and I think that he'll make the club more attractive to players of his level as well in the future. And it's the kind of signing that they needed to make this summer, right. And they've done it, so well done.
Cristiano Conchi, Mr. Conchi, tweeting, Real Madrid doing what they did 4 years ago, Ozil and Di Maria out, just like Schneider and Robin were kicked out. I mean, it was quite a remarkable thing how both those players went on to so much success, European titles elsewhere. Did Di Maria go somewhere, though? Where did he go?
I don't think he did go.
No.
All right, so yeah. Only half right on that one. On the Ozil topic, how do you think, how will Arsenal's first 11 look now, at least at the front?
Well, I imagine Cazorla will play perhaps on the left of Giroud and Ozil will maybe come on the inside right channel, perhaps if they play three and both of those players support him, because you can't not play Cazorla, I don't think, if Ozil's in there. But I do think, I imagine he will play kind of between midfield and attack.
All right. And does their bathroom still need fixing up, given that, A, they got a reliable keeper in Viviano, who was down in the second division in Italy with Palermo, but previously at Fiorentina, and also this Sunday they came up with a whopping 1-0 win in the North London derby.
Well, I wasn't that surprised that Arsenal won that game. I think the last 3 years we've seen in that game come into it, and Spurs have been hyped up heavily, and Arsenal actually sometimes I think they get underestimated, and you know, I think probably a lot of people have, including us, have been guilty of it in the past, and me included. And but Arsenal have a pretty good first 11. It's good enough to finish fourth every year, which is, you know, a good achievement in itself. It's that they need to be pushing it on, and they don't necessarily have the backup on. I think if you were to compare the two benches on Sunday, Spurs probably had a stronger one. Arsenal had the likes of Sonogo, and I think they had a 16-year-old on the bench. Mm. But the first 11 itself is pretty strong.
And Arsenal didn't have to integrate a lot of those players into, you know, Spurs are having to bring all those players in and get them working together very early in the season in a very big match. So I think it was a great time for Arsenal to meet Spurs at home.
But it's also typical that Jack Wilshere would waddle off before half time, so it shows their vulnerabilities still.
Illness, right, rather than injury, though.
Flamini,
at least
Flamini played well when he came on as well. So yeah, maybe they did fix the bathroom.
Maybe they did fix up that bathroom. Here's Barney Rone saying, "I hate all Premier League teams equally, Barney. But if you don't enjoy a team who spent nothing beating the team who spent it all, you aren't watching right."
You can see that. I mean, that's partly as a result of buying a player at the age of 19 and developing through to being one of the biggest players in the world. They deserve that windfall.
The Spurs spent the money that they got from Bale. So I think they ended up, they might have even ended up in credit, I think. I'm not sure, because they've sold so many players this summer as well. Huddleston, Parker and Corker and so on. Yeah. But I think people maybe underestimate as well the loss of Bale to that team.
Is their side dangerously unbalanced going forward, especially now with Capoue very much kaput?
Well, we've still got to see Lamella and Eriksen come in.
Yeah, but they're all players at the front. It's the people who kind of shore stuff up at
Sandro,
the back.
Sandro, Dembele, Paulinho, good midfield there.
All right.
Dawson looked very creaky. when he turned so slowly. Yeah, I do wonder whether he may be a player who this season could cost Spurs a good few points.
Would you be hitting the panic button after this?
No, I wouldn't be hitting the panic button too early.
All right, Spurs?
Yeah.
After two wins and one defeat.
It's a defeat.
Okay.
They haven't scored from open play, though.
That's true. Mm. Yeah. Just two goals so far.
And seven or
both
eight
of them penalties
in Europe.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Do you want to move on to the other big game on what they're calling Supine Sunday? It came at Anfield. And Liverpool, Craig, 3-3, top of the league.
Yes. And I was very impressed with the way Liverpool played. I know most neutrals will say it was a dire game, and I think Liverpool gave the ball away a bit more than they have done in previous games. But I thought United played very well, but they lacked that creative midfielder who they have been, you know, supposedly on the lookout for. And there was their midfield and forwards didn't gel. Van Persie was very frustrated, obviously, so he showed it. But Liverpool started the game the same as they have done in the previous two 1-0 wins. Just started at high intensity, very good possession football and fast football. Got the goal early on. They scored in the first half in every game they played. And then the huge difference from this Liverpool team to the one last season is they look properly drilled in terms of the transitions. And when they lose possession, they're like a basketball team getting back in position really, really quickly and just cutting out any passes. And they've done that against Stoke Villa and against Manchester United, who are a much better team. I thought they did it really, really well. And it's credit to Rodgers that that his message now appears to be getting across to his players, and they are very, very drilled when they're out of possession, which wasn't true last year.
But they only really managed it for about half an hour, didn't they?
But they scored the goal so early on that I do think that has an effect on you psychologically, and therefore they became more accustomed to defending. This happened against Villa as well in the second half. But what I mean is they did very well in terms of defending, which they didn't seem capable of at times last season.
Yeah, they certainly. I mean, I thought the wingers, until kind of Valencia was bombing on from fullback, the wingers really didn't get into the game for United either, and they didn't beat their fullbacks. And you know, Jose Enrique and Glenn Johnson both played well.
Yeah, and United fans were very disappointed with Ashley Young again. They don't understand why he keeps playing for them. And I thought he on that side, Glenn Johnson was more physically imposing. He kept winning the aerial battles and actually got forward quite easily past Young.
Bad day for Roy Hodgson, of course. So what was the background on that story, Greg?
Well, I couldn't quite see from my vantage point at the back of the cop, but where Tom Werner was actually in the cop, by the way, on Sunday.
Yeah,
he was walking around having his pictures taken, then he slipped through an exit door, which obviously went back round to the director's box, and which he was sat where Roy Hodgson wasn't.
I think it was
a mistake, which it was an honest mistake by somebody that
he was
didn't...
seated in the kind of spillover area of the director's box, but then tried to go into the director's lounge at half time. Is that right? Pre-game,
I believe so,
and was refused entry because he didn't have the right kind of pass.
Yeah. Which seems that might be it's either the Jobsworth who is who didn't want to get sacked for whatever reason, or it's somebody who maybe doesn't like Roy Hodgson.
Right.
Who's
well, they then said he could come in, and he said he'd rather not. And he said he almost left at half time. He wasn't having the best of days, of course, because he'd already heard about Ben Foster being out, Sturridge pulling up, injured, although he is now going to turn up for the England game. But in terms of the prospective England World Cup qualifiers, disastrous. I mentioned Sturridge, Ben Foster out, Jones going off, Glenn Johnson as well, and Wayne Rooney. The bad news there, that he had a terrible gash on his face, which possibly not for the first time, but he's going to be out for how long? How long is that?
3 weeks, according to Moyes, I think.
3 weeks. Yeah. And how did that happen?
Phil Jones.
Right.
You wouldn't put it. You wouldn't least likely candidate for somebody to do something clumsy and physical in the training, but apparently.
Right. Well, we'll talk more about what that means for England's prospects in Wednesday's extra special pre-World Cup qualifier. For Weekly Extra, but you mentioned United's search for somebody creative in midfield. It's not like they've got a Kagawa sitting
Well, exactly. I don't understand why they're going to have to give him another go. He's going to have to get a second chance now, because they haven't signed that kind of player. They've gone for Fellaini, who'll be somebody who it might take him time to, you know, to fit into United's style, or United may have to change their style to fit his kind of play.
There have been some suggestions that Kagawa's the kind of player who just tactically requires too much thinking from a manager. It forces a manager outside their comfort zone. Do you think that's fair in Moyes' case?
In what way?
Well, in the sense that he's not a forward, and he requires you to
think.
Yeah, he requires you to think in terms of how to fit him in best to your side.
Is it not more the case that he just wants to occupy similar positions to those that Rooney would want to occupy if Rooney wasn't playing up top, and he can't play up top?
But if Rooney's not playing because he's got a nasty cut on his head...
Yeah, well then you...
Then why is he not in there?
But he's also frail and tiny, and kind of takes some time to get into the stride of things.
Okay.
You know?
But, yeah... Cleverley's not much bigger though, and and
also
much less talented.
Ashley Young on the left and Giggs on the right.
Yeah,
it's just rubbish, really.
Yeah,
Nani on the bench, no Zaha as well. Players with a bit of individual quality. That those Ashley Young just swinging in cross after cross after cross to no avail.
I don't know whether they thought there might be a chance that Kagawa was going to leave, so therefore he was left out because they thought this business was going to happen, which didn't, in farcical circumstances, which I'm sure we'll come to.
All right, let's come to it now, because you mentioned they search for a creative midfielder. They come up with Fellaini. Well, managing to pay more than they actually could have done a month ago.
Yeah, they've paid £4 million more for Fellaini so late in the day when... I think Ed Woodward, the vice chairman, is obviously he's largely accountable for this. But I think United as a club, bringing a new manager in who needed a lot of support, and bringing a vice chairman in to oversee football business matters at the same time as bringing this new manager in, is too much. They needed probably somebody more experienced around to do these big deals, because Moyes he's been an Everton manager where when he's approached a club for a player, that club has known Everton haven't got the money, so they haven't been able to play hardball with Everton. They know that's the amount of money they've got, that's the amount they'll pay. At a big club like United, where you obviously have to pay a premium for players because you know how much money the club generates, then things are different for Moyes, and they need a manager, somebody around him who can help push those deals through. So, you know, quibbling over whatever it was, 3-4 million for Herrera over the buyout clause so late in the day just seems like it's the
same money that they didn't need to spend on Fellaini but did.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. They thought they were going to get both players last night still. But yeah, I think it seems really daft.
I just think there's a possibility that people are overreacting about this. I mean, I think Moyes would probably have been perfectly happy with a draw at the weekend, and they weren't far, you know, they didn't create enough chances, but neither did Liverpool after the initial rush.
Would you be perfectly happy with just Fellaini from his transfer window?
I don't think it's a bad acquisition. I mean, I think if you compare it to, say, Fernandinho for 30 million, I think he's a proven Premiership player. I think
City have brought in other players.
Sure.
Beyond the money,
United won the title by 11 points. They're in the first window of a 6-year plan. Probably the worst thing to do would be to go and spend money scattershot, not get any players that you can make use of, having spent the amount of money that suggests you need to be then retaining your title, otherwise it's not an appropriate investment.
Jacob?
I just thought it was all very amateurish the whole way they've conducted themselves in this window, and you know they've lost out on so many big targets, and you wonder what info they had on Fabregas, and they couldn't convince Thiago to come. There was all this talk about Ronaldo and Bale as well. Possibly they were going to challenge for them. Never happened. They knew that Fellaini had that, £23 million release clause. They knew when it expired. Moyes obviously knew because he worked with him for 5 years. They end up paying over the odds for him, given what the release clause was. Then they also identify what this guy Herrera's release clause is, and they're quibbling over, at the end of it, over a couple of million. They know that he's good enough, or they think he's good enough to play for them. They know how much they're going to have to pay for him to sign him, and then they're haggling over the money. It's just
so naive.
Very, very strange.
It's like very naive, like business from a big
Ozil, but Arsenal, the way they conduct themselves.
Compare it and contrast it, if you will, to how Liverpool conducted their transfer business, Greg.
Well, they got targets in early in the window. They still left a few till quite late on, but I do think that was more to do with the teams they were buying from. I do think the deals were in place and it was more to do with the price. But I think Liverpool have added to their squad in the areas they needed to.
Are you excited by this flurry of late signings on Monday?
Yes, I am. Yeah,
Moses.
I think Moses is a very good signing. Some Liverpool fans were, reacting a little bit coolly to Moses. But from what I saw of him at Chelsea last season, he's become a cleverer player than he was at Wigan. He didn't play, you know, in every game, but when he did play, I thought he had good impact, and he will free Coutinho up to come inside and influence the game, which is what Rodgers' plan was all along.
Right.
And in defence, they desperately needed to strengthen, and they have done now. And they've also kept hold of Skrtel, who had a very good game. And I thought he'd be on his way.
Right. So Mamadou Sakho, opinion very much divided. Joey Barton thinks he's rubbish. Everybody else seems to think he's really great.
Well, Joey Barton's always right, isn't he, about everything?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Joey Barton said Neymar was rubbish, didn't he?
He did. He also called Thiago Silva a ladyboy. But as he was saying, because he's, you know, we're now neighbours, he was saying the other day there are no facts in football. He's a little bit paraphrasing Nietzsche, unusually enough. Only opinions. But yeah, I mean, he, to be fair, has actually played against the fella, and he said no, he didn't actually think he was going to be a good acquisition.
Ancelotti didn't like him that much either.
Yeah, that's what I was coming on to. He's not actually playing for Paris Saint-Germain.
No, he's played for France. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've seen him maybe even two games, and I think he has looked okay. But I presume there's something beyond just, you know, seeing a couple of performances in the scouting system at Liverpool. They've looked at him and believe he is what the club needs. I'm not convinced that he'll come straight into the team, even though they've paid $13 million, because first Toure did very well and he's not going to be out for as long as they thought. And then I thought Skrtel played very well when he came in, and he's somebody who you could, you know, to come into a game against Manchester United and be as calm as he was impressive.
Let's just have a huzzah, or three huzzahs, as indeed the Gazzetta dello Sport put it yesterday, for the return of Ricky Kakar to Milan. He took a massive pay cut, millions and millions and millions of pay cut, to go back to the Rossoneri, and it's all very exciting. Some people are saying, ooh, last time they got a player back that they'd unloaded for large sums of cash, it really didn't work out too well. Shevchenko, who scored one, or maybe none, I think, after he went back to the San Siro. But will Kakar be the same? I think he can play a big role for them, actually.
How old is he now?
He's 31, I think. 31. Yeah.
They keep players going there, don't they?
They do, don't they? They do keep players going, and they kept hold of El Shaarawy, which is really nice to see, and that was exciting.
Surely he'll fit in at Milan much better than he did at Real Madrid, who were a counter-attacking team, and half the time the ball was just, you know, flying past him when he was in midfield.
That's true.
He did play.
Yeah. And Kevin Prince-Boateng, meanwhile, though, was sold to Schalke. And there was some suggestion that was to free up a place for Kensuke Honda, but there's all sorts of goings on with CSKA Moscow. Maybe that deal is going to come about in January. All very exciting, as was the weekend's action. I don't know if you were across this in Italy.
Loads of goals.
Mm. How many goals? 43 goals.
Very, very un-Serie A.
Yeah, although, I mean, some of them were for really, really, really awful goalkeeping and defensive mistakes. Some were absolutely brilliant.
Vidal.
The Vidal goal?
Vidal double.
The other thing about the Juve goals was Bonucci's performance and the balls that he was pinging over.
Yeah, he was kind of, he was the replacement Pirlo.
Yeah. Yeah, they looked brilliant this weekend. They took Lazio apart in a very real sense. And I think the thing is that lots of teams look good going forward. They're the only team that looks like they know how to defend. Napoli did brilliant. You had some absolutely amazing goals. You had to pick one out that you could go on YouTube. The Panagiotis Kone goal for Bologna against Sampdoria, I think. And huge wins all over the place. Fiorentina with a massive win against Genoa. And we mentioned Juve destroying Lazio. Napoli had a 4-2 win, blah, 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 all that kind of thing. All very exciting. Oh, Giuseppe Rossi as well. He got two goals.
Is that 3-2 now?
Three and two.
After pretty much 2 years out with two cruciate knee injuries. That's very nice for him.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
And he's forming a good partnership with Mario Gomez. He was a very good signing for Fiorentina, it seems.
They look good. Mm. They look good. It was very exciting in Italy. Look forward to the return of Serie A after the international break, because Inter-Juventus, and Inter, bizarrely, they look like a car crash in the making, but Mazzarri has arrived from Napoli and has come up with two wins. This weekend they were away at Catania, which is a very tough place to go and win, and they won 3-0. So well done to them. In France, as you may have seen on certain, you know, Eurotastic Sunday roundup shows, there was a big top of the table clash as Marseille, who had been leading the likes of PSG and Monaco coming into this, took on self same Monegasques at the Velodrome, and boy, 2-1, and the winning goal scored by a man named Riviere, which is kind of appropriate because they're both down on the Côte
d'Azur. Riviera.
If you stretch it a bit, you know. It was a lively game, actually, much livelier than most Sunday night French games that I've seen.
And also, the Velodrome's being reopened. It looks fantastic, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. They had it open all the way, but they just had lots of scaffolding and plastic sheeting around.
Is it Richard Rogers? Somebody, anyway.
It's an architect thing.
And they imagine that only adds to the atmosphere, which is all already kind of, you know.
Said Joey Barton was getting all misty-eyed about the fact that he was not going to be going back and playing there. He said they're the best fans, etc., etc., and now with that roof on, it will really...
But couldn't Joey Barton, he could have stayed there had he taken a pay cut. Really ought not to get misty-eyed about it and have a bit of football ambition instead of spouting nonsense and then taking the money.
Hey,
your neighbour, sorry.
Yeah. More importantly, what happens when the light refracts off the new roof?
Yeah, that's the question.
And people's yachts go up in flames.
Wow. Good to get a bit of perspective on that.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks.
Human life is precious.
Germany...
Did anybody watch the European Super Cup on the Friday?
Yeah. Yes.
That was the best game of the weekend. Yeah. That was
Do you think it was the best game of the week?
That was mammoth.
Well, you know what? Let's get Raphael Honigstein on to gloat a little bit about that penalty win for Bayern Munich. And maybe some of the other crazy action that's been going on in the Bundesliga. Stuttgart, for example, firing their manager, Bruno Labbadia, and immediately bouncing back with a 6-2 win at the weekend. Craziness.
Hey, James Richardson.
Woo-hoo. I tell you what, last time you were this excited was probably Friday night with the action at the Eden Arena in Prague.
That was one fantastic Super Cup game. Brilliant.
Even though it was ruined by the referees and their conspiracy.
Yes. If you love football,
yep,
as we all do in this pod, you would have, of course, let Ramirez on the pitch.
Yep. Destroy the ankle
clumsy
of Götze. Yep.
He's not that kind of player, not malicious, etc. But yeah, apart from that, it was wonderful. But I mean, even that little, you know, insight into Mourinho's psyche, I think, was worth it, because I think we can put the notion to bed that he's a new happy one, the new changed Mourinho. I think he's very much the old one, and I suspect that most Chelsea fans actually like it.
Tell me something, Götze, whose leg was the subject of the tackle which led to Ramirez's red card, how long is he out for now?
He's out for 3 weeks. His leg is in plaster. He's got ligament damage, so nothing on the bone, so it's not too bad. But, not the kind of outcome that endeared Mourinho's comment to the Bayern bosses. Mm. So I think if he was ever going for the grand slam of titles and have an eye on maybe branching out to the Bundesliga, Bavaria might not be the preferred destination.
Yeah, he doesn't seem too popular there. Ribery, it was interesting to see actually admitting publicly that he celebrated with Guardiola because it was a goal against Mourinho.
Yes, that's right. Although against could probably refer to the sort of the sporting sense, you know, this is a goal against Mourinho in the game rather than him personally. But I think Ribery understood, and a lot of people in the club understood, just how much pressure Guardiola was under. I mean, he really seemed very relieved, and if you listen to some of the players and some of the people on the board, like Matthias Sammer, they all recognise that the debate would have gone in a very different direction if Bayern had ended up losing this game with one man up in extra time against Mourinho and being out fought and outdone on counter attack. So the result shapes everything, especially in Munich, but certainly for this game. And it's really bought him a bit of time and a bit of belief, because I think we've talked about this before, you know, you can change and you can put your own ideas on a team. The one thing you need to do is convince them that what you're doing is successful, and there's no better way than with wins. And I think he's given himself a bit more time now and a bit more trust through this win.
All right, well, Bayern weren't playing in the Bundesliga this weekend. Dortmund at top of the pile. And how about that Stuttgart, with that 6-2 win over Hoffenheim?
A crazy win, hard to explain. Of course, the new manager coming in, Thomas Schneider, is a former Stuttgart player. I think there was certainly an element of the team being very happy to get rid of Bruno Labbadia, and some sort of pent-up frustration coming through and converting itself into a good performance. Hoffenheim are always a little bit suspect defensively, yeah, but a great game, and one of a number of high-scoring games. Of course, this happens very rarely in the Bundesliga, as you know.
Absolutely. And are you excited about having a new German chum to play with here in London?
Not sure how much playing time we'll both get. You know, the Arsenal press department is very guarded when it comes to letting their men out, as it were. But no, I am happy. I think it'd be great to see him. I think it'd be great for the German national team, because he'd prefer Mesut Ozil being given a star role at Arsenal than to one who, maybe for political reasons, is being frozen out at the Bernabeu in a World Cup year. So I think it's good news all around. And it'd be interesting to see if you can actually make Arsenal play more like Arsenal with another guy who's sort of fits the almost the cliche of it. But of course, his quality is such that you could argue that it doesn't matter if they perhaps could have spent the money differently in other departments, because he will absolutely improve this team, as he would have probably improved almost every other team in the world.
Mm. Brilliant stuff, Rafa. Look forward to having you in the pod again soon.
My pleasure.
Au revoir.
Bye.
Paul.
And I just, yeah, I think what Rafa's, the point Rafa's making there is a good one. And I think he, it will be interesting to see with Arsenal, because I thought watching that derby, the football, the one touch attacking football they were playing was better than I've seen Arsenal do for a few years now. And putting another player into that mix, their football could be some of the best in the division attacking wise. And that might be enough to oversee the deficit sometime.
Just desperately need not to get any injuries to Giroud. Yeah, that's the thing. They're just light in the striking department. Fine, whilst Giroud's fit, but if he's not, then I'm not sure.
He's a big lad, though.
Well, yeah.
Bentner's back.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Did Bentner end up staying?
Yeah.
Mm.
There you go.
Lukaku's a big lad, and he's a very good big lad who Everton have done very well to get in on loan before West Brom could get
him. I'm surprised that Moo doesn't feel that he needs him.
Well, yeah, he's gone and he's bought Samuel Lee, who's 32 years old, and his career's winding down. And Lukaku had such a good season for West Brom last year, and I imagine he's exactly what Everton need. They've let Anichibi go out, yeah. And they also, I'm sure, signing James McCarthy, they did that because they needed somebody who could create for Lukaku, who will thrive if McCarthy can get the balls into the box on the left-hand side, which I'm sure he will bat away.
That's interesting, because I bet a lot of us are a little bit confused as to which player James McCarthy actually is. I had him, for example, totally muddled up with James McClain.
No, he has gone to Wigan, though.
My confusion. Mm. Who is he, actually? James McCarthy. Which one's he?
He is the very good Scottish central midfield player who was being looked at by...
He's Irish.
There you go.
He was a very good...
Well, no, he's born in Glasgow, but plays...
Yeah, sorry. Right, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. But it's just very easy to get him in... It's very easy to get him in James McCarthy. Yeah,
not McCarthy. Not James McCarthy.
He is Irish, and he'll be playing alongside... That's an easy mistake to make, but he'll be playing alongside Darren Gibson, so that's good for the Irish national team, isn't it? Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, so he'll be in the middle.
In the middle, alongside...
He won't be out on the wing putting
alongside
crosses.
Alongside Ross Barkley and so on.
Well, and Gareth Barry as well. They've got lots of...
Yeah, well, Gary Barry. They're better off than they were before the transfer window.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, without doubt. They probably have done the best out of any club in the transfer window.
Argumentativeness is Paul McInnes.
I still think that Fellaini was technically their best player.
Really?
But he wasn't playing in his position under Martinez anymore.
What position was that? The number, the false 10?
Yeah. He was playing deep.
He was playing deep, but he's remarkably effective in that deep position. I mean, he is, I think, he can play all over the middle of the park. I think they will definitely miss him.
I don't think he's suited to the way Martinez plays and McCarthy much more.
Maybe true. He doesn't touch the... He can have a lot of influence without touching the ball much.
McCarthy again?
McCarthy's the one who's not James McClain.
All right. Or
James
McArthur.
Yeah. Boy. There was a lot to go at.
Or General McArthur
as well. I'm surprised a bit didn't come in for Maloney.
Or Senator McCarthy, who conducted the anti-communist hearings.
Yeah,
right.
I'm surprised no one went for Maloney.
Maloney and McManaman. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, we're talking about football. We're just saying
muck words.
We're having a cross table conversation about football, and you two are
Jimmy
Mack.
Very good. Now they had a entirely respectable these days. Apparently now a 0-0 draw at Cardiff, who have picked up parking lots Peter Edinwiggie.
Yeah.
That's good news, isn't it? For both sides. Good to see Peter Edinwiggie find himself a home.
I think if we're talking about who had a good transfer window, I think Malky Mackay did. I think in the early doors when he was offering a lot of money to a championship player who rejected him.
Right.
It looked like the signals going out were that they were going to stagnate, and I think he ended up pulling out. I think particularly with Medel, I think Medel caught a lot of people by surprise.
Mm.
Big signing, big character. Mm. Sent out a message as to what type of setup they were
Pitbull,
exactly. That Cardiff are going to be competitive throughout the season, and I think Arden Wing is going to add a little bit of flair in there too.
All right. Well, on the subject of heartwarming newly promoted sides, etc., how about Palace? Ian Holloway and his little jig on the touchline brought a tear to the eye.
Yeah, they were still pretty shambolic, though, for a lot of the match, and they were one man up as well.
Yeah,
just not as shambolic as Sunderland.
No. Right. Hey.
I did...
Don't tell that to De Canio. He won't have a word said against his players.
No.
That was quite refreshing, wasn't it, hearing Paolo tell it like it is?
I did a De Canio game last week, Southampton v Sunderland, and he is just impossible to understand, and you kind of wonder whether he is able to get his message across to players, because he speaks loads really, really quickly, and he kind of is fluent in English, but it's just kind of it's just all over the place. The sentences, the words, he just plucks them out of nowhere and sort of trying to transcribe what
he
says.
Get him on the pod, I think.
It's just impossible. Yeah, trying to transcribe what he says is basically impossible.
There was a lot of outrage about his comments, about saying that his players play with empty heads, and that he was talking about G and his lack of heart.
Yeah, that wasn't great when he did seem to duck out of what would have been a pretty easy header.
If he G is one of the few players in that squad, though, that he hasn't signed. So I suspect you probably never see him again.
All right. Now, the players he has signed of late include Fabio Borini of not being that good at Liverpool fame and Dossena of not being that good at Liverpool fame. And they've got all tough run of fixtures coming up.
Bold Italians he's signed, doesn't he? He likes people to look like him.
Is Borini bald these days?
He had a skinhead for a while anyway.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I bet. Well, maybe he's grown his hair back. I've not seen Borini for so long.
Giaccarini's got hair.
Giaccarini's got hair. And they've got a tough run of fixtures coming up. Arsenal at home, Liverpool at home, Man United at home. Three of their next four games.
You've got to look at that club and think there's something chaotic going on inside there. The way it's been going.
What gives you that impression?
Maybe an obvious statement, but over the past few years, things have just been getting generally worse, and now they've bet the house on Di Canio. And if it goes wrong, what do they do? You know, was any manager going to want to go in there and pull together this random assortment of players from all over the world?
Mark Hughes.
Well, he's in the job and doing an effective one already.
Yeah, that's true. Stoke at West Ham, Jacob. Yeah,
they played well, Stoke. Yeah, they were knocking the ball around neatly. I think you said they did it
at
Anfield.
They did that in the first half.
Yeah, they probably weren't able to do it so well against Liverpool, but it's a bit easier against the way West Ham played on.
They are only goal difference, Stoke, only goal difference away from Champions League. We're in fifth place in the Premier League.
Wow. And do you know the story about Jermaine Pennant, who scored that great free kick on Saturday?
Is this the car parking story?
Well, no, not the car parking story. He was released by Stoke during the summer, came back 12 days later. They let him go, and then 12 days later they thought, actually, no, we better offer him a new contract.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Brilliant. And thank goodness they did. All right. Other news. Man City beat Hull City. Newcastle. Fulham. They got a win. Ben Arthur goal, etc. Do we want to say nasty things about Joe Kinnear, who said, judge me on my signings and hasn't made any? So the jury's still out, effectively, if we're judging him on his signings. He's making it.
If he just keeps on forever never buying anybody, then he'll never get sacked.
He'll come out and say Kabay is like a new signing.
That's true, actually, isn't it? They hang on to Kabay. Norwich beat Saints.
Good game. I was there. It was a good game.
Great win for Norwich. Should Saints fans be concerned after all the money they spent?
I mean, it's early days, isn't it? But they bought basically three premium players for knocking on 10 million or over 10 million each down the spine of the team. And we didn't get to see that much of Lovren. He was good in the air and he had one silky dribble all the way up the pitch. But Wanyama was like completely outshone by Leroy Fer, who was a third of the price. Wanyama looks big, strong, but slow and technically limited.
There was a really interesting comment, actually. I can't remember whether it was Kilmarnock manager or...
He was former Kilmarnock manager.
What did he say?
He said Neil Lennon deserves a sainthood for getting 12 million for Victor Wanyama.
Because
he can't pass.
Because any time he got the ball when he was playing Celtic, they just said, let him have the ball because he'll just give it back.
There's a lot of Celtic fans have pointed out that he was former Kilmarnock boss Kenny Shills.
Still, it's a perspective.
He did that on Saturday. And, you know, I think Osvaldo will get goals, but I'm not sure how many goals. And again, he's not that mobile, maybe early season. And actually, Southampton have been the recipients of a lot of positive talk. They've got some good players. Looking at that, I couldn't see that many exceptional players. I think Luke Shaw is an exceptional player, but he was out injured. And, you know, I don't think Southampton will go down, but I think it'll be a tough season.
Lallana's quite flaky, isn't he, as well? Ramirez hasn't really done it. Pochettino's won five games, I think, since replacing Atkins.
And letting Punchin go out on loan as well.
Some of those five games were against Man City and Liverpool. They played very well in those games, which perhaps is... papered over some of the cracks. I fully expected Southampton to do very well this season, so I'm really surprised.
The new Norwich.
Yeah, well, we'd had a disastrous game the previous week and looked like a team of strangers, which to a certain extent, you know, we brought in eight new players, so we might do. But we looked good. We looked like we understood the formation. Redmond, I've seen him twice in the flesh now, and I'm quite impressed with him.
He's on fire.
But he's really good with the ball at his feet. He's got lots of tricks, and he's strong for his size as well. I mean, I think, you know, his decision-making, blah, 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 but compared to some of the other England prospects, wingers, he's much more tricky and less direct.
What about when he went to the barber? Nothing wrong with that decision-making.
Well, I did think when he arrived with that trendy barnet that that won't last long at Chris Hughton. Chris Hughton is not a man for kind of...
Well, he's got his own kind of two-tone thing going on, is he not?
But it's a sensible haircut.
Oh, all right.
And it's more the natural kind of greying of his hair that
all right.
Two-tone.
Cara Road, eh? Super. Now, that's pretty much it for this Football Weekly. No Sid... But there'll be plenty of time for chat about Bale and to find out who were those crazy guys pretending to be Man United executives, if indeed they ever existed, this in the middle of that Herrera non-deal, on Thursday's Football Weekly Extra, when, quite frankly, we'll be glad to have it to talk about, because all there is otherwise is that World Cup qualifier stuff. Although, yeah, big World Cup qualifiers for England. They are big, aren't they? No, I mean, they are, England. Yeah. Yeah.
Moldova.
And Ukraine.
Next Tuesday, is it Ukraine?
Yeah. Those are big games. Thursday, we'll have the lowdown with Amy Lawrence. That's right. Good. Anyway, that's it for today's show. And many thanks to Paul McInnes, Greg Bukowski and Jacob Steinberg and producer Ben and you at home. And speak to you soon, eh? Have a super week.